Welcome to the Enterprise Mobility Roundup podcast, brought to you by Blue Fletch. We discuss technology topics related to Android and workforce devices and how they intersect with business and mobility.
Hello and join us. Thank you for joining us today. Today I have Veronica Recchi, who's the head of Blue Fletch's UX design practice. And one of the things that we've been looking at, or she's been looking at with her team over the last couple of years, is accessibility guidelines. So I think when we think about accessibility, a lot of times it's the, you know, the handicap ramps in buildings or doors, things like that. But when it comes to technology, there's a much different approach to accessibility. And I think Veronica's got a lot of experience about this. I know you and your team gave a internal TED Talk on the W Web Accessibility Guidelines. It's a mouthful, but maybe you can tell us, you know, what is accessibility in your opinion? Can you maybe give us a background on that in respect to technology and mobile technology?
Yes. And thank you for having me on the podcast. So accessibility in the tech world, it's definitely a very interesting thing because when you think of products, like physical products, there's been so much history behind them. They've been here since the beginning of time that when it comes to accessibility, we've had decades and decades to figure out what the requirements are there. But when it comes to the digital world, when you think about it, it's all very new in that context. And so it's still the beginning of figuring out what accessibility means. And we're starting to shift more and more into understanding that because one in four Americans are living with some form of a disability. And 13.7% of those are mobility, about 6% are hard of hearing, and about 4.6% are vision related. And those are all things that would definitely impact the way that you approach your web content. And by approaching accessibility in the digital space, we're thinking about, okay, how do those different experiences affect the way that our platforms work? And do they still accommodate those?
Got it. And these guidelines, who were they created by and why were they created?
So the WCAG.
Oh, you got content, it right.
Yes. The Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. They're created by an international group to start to set some sort of standards when it comes to accessibility. And while they're not necessarily officially recognized, they have been recognized in several different court cases in the US. If you live in, say, the UK or Canada, you actually have your own government set version of accessibility guidelines. But right now, the WCAG is what you would go to try to have some sort of international understanding to make sure that they're all unified. Because while government to government, it might vary a little bit, at the end of the day, your website is more or less going to be the same for each audience. So having a centralized base to look at and start to base your accessibility off of makes it a lot easier than checking for every country that might use your service.
Got it. And the standards originally started out focused on web apps and web pages. How does that translate into mobile apps and mobile devices?
Yeah, so they originally started for web, hence the name, but most of their guidelines tend to be very general. The way that you would test for them, those types of pieces that they list out, they do tend to be web focused based off of their descriptions, but things like contrast, different modes of navigating the website, things like that, they're general enough that they could apply to both web and mobile. It's just a matter of how you test each of them that starts to change.
Got it. I'm sure there's some on mobile. You know, when you have a physical mm-hmm. mobile device in your hand, it's a little bit different than having a screen or different format there. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned this before when we were talking about this, but there's four core areas to these guidelines. What at a high level, what are those areas? And maybe we could dive into each one of those and maybe you can give some examples of how it applies to people's applications and their mobile apps.
Yes. So as of WCAG 2.0, we're now currently in 2.1, which does adjust a little bit for more of the mobile technology and things that have been introduced. But overall, with 2.0, the WCAG introduced four overarching principles that you should consider when doing the testing criteria and guidelines for accessibility. They're perceivable, operable, understandable, and robust. Perceivable is what you probably are assuming when you think of accessibility, especially in the UX world. So that is information and user interface components must be presentable to users in ways they can perceive. So things like alternative text for images or color contrast, the text spacing, those types of pieces all fall under perceivable. So how does your UI translate based off of the different ways that people would be perceiving it?
Can you talk about, maybe dive into color a little bit more? I know we all have the apps we don't like because they have terrible colors, but can you talk about, and I think you had mentioned this before in one of the lunch and learns you gave or speeches you gave around people who are colorblind, what percentage of Americans have colorblindness?
Off the top of my head, I don't know that percentage, but
I believe we can throw it into... It's close to double digits, I think. There's some amount of colorblindness, yeah.
So it's more common than we think. Also, it's very common in men as well, but... There's two different ways that color tends to play into your accessibility. So there's the piece of contrast with color. So you don't necessarily want to put a bright red text on top of a bright yellow background. If they're the same saturation levels and someone has color blindness, they're both going to appear as the same gray and they're not going to be able to fully perceive what that is. There's also a wide variety of different types of color blindness. So it's not all just grayscale. Someone could be red and green colorblind. I know I went to college at Virginia Tech, and there was one time they painted this huge maroon VT in like what we call the drill field, just this big green patch of grass with this big maroon Virginia Tech logo on it. And me and my friends were talking about it like, oh, that's really cool. Didn't realize our one friend was colorblind. And to him, it all looked exactly the same. He could not tell that there was a logo on the grass.
So green and maroon were the same in his...
Yeah, he was red-green colorblind. So to him, it all just looked a shade of brown.
Interesting. Yeah, you never think about it until you actually get into it. It's definitely something. And then for testing for that, you mentioned tools before. Are there common tools that, you know, like a mobile application, so be it on Android or iOS, where you can just put it into colorblind mode to see what it looks like? Is that something that's built in OS?
So there's different platforms that you could use. There's a variety of sketch plugins. If you are a UX designer trying to test out your designs, Spark is one that's very commonly used to double check that. There's also a few different contrast checkers online where you would plug in your different hex codes that you were using, and it would give you a matrix of this color plus this color does pass contrast. This color and this color, though, does not pass contrast. And so there's different ways that you can test that, but there's a lot of online resources out there.
Got it. And then another question I've been interested in, I've worked with some people that have visual impairment and actually used screen readers. So they're blind or had low visual acuity and used a screen reader to actually read their computer screen for them. How does that work on mobile? What is the similar experience for mobile devices?
Yeah, I know iOS also has their own versions of screen readers and voice to text. Those accessibility options are all available on your device as well. And so there was always that like little white circle icon that people would sometimes use when like their home button would break. But in reality, that was the accessibility tool that would have the options in there of, oh, can you read this page for me? Things like that. It is something that as we get less and less buttons on our devices, it's like, okay, where on the screen do I hit to make this work? But
nice. Yeah, I've actually used the accessibility screen reader as a hack for not paying for Audible books. You can go into Kindle and actually have the screen reader just read your books to you. And it's gotten really good in the last couple of years, which is pretty interesting.
And that alternative text is super important. It's the very first guideline and criteria in the WCAG, because if you have a website filled with beautiful infographics and images and ways that you're expressing your information, and none of it has alternative text, to someone who's reading that using those voice to text to read it, they're just getting an image is here, an image is here. And they're not getting the full picture of your story. You're not giving them a meaningful experience. And that's actually what the whole Beyonce lawsuit was about, was their ticket sale website had no alternative text. So a music experience, which is something that should be very easy for blind people to experience because it's all auditory, was blocked off to them because of that lack of accessibility.
Got it. So hopping into the second area you mentioned was operable. What is operable? Maybe expound on that a little bit for me.
Yes. So operable is kind of similar to what you were talking about of how do you navigate this site. It's more on the side of like keyboard tabbing through, entering those different ways of mobily entering into your information, making sure that tap areas are as big as they can be, so people can make sure that they're hitting the right things, those types of pieces, using keyboard shortcuts that maybe if you can't use a keyboard, what's the alternative? Or if you're only navigating with a keyboard, making sure that that all works too. And so it's all of those operable, making sure that the functionality fits for different modules.
Yeah. So on mobile, so I definitely understand that using the tab, I was a big fan of tab because I feel like I had a mouse that would always break. So learn how to use tab on the keyboard. On mobile, is there a corresponding equivalent to the, you know, tabbing through things, or what does that look like? Are there people that are using keyboards on mobile as opposed to using the touch interface?
Yeah. So that's one of the areas where I personally feel like the guidelines are starting to lack, where it's very keyboard focused and it's not entirely realistic to what the mobile experience is. And so there's just a big gap there in terms of what you're able to do, but it is something that is potentially really, especially in the enterprise space, something that we could consider a lot more. If you're thinking about a warehouse worker and they have their hands full and they're trying to navigate on the device, but also undock all of these boxes, they're on a scissor lift, they're just kind of everywhere. Accessibility stuff would actually help them, even if they're not someone who is disabled. The ability to make it easy enough to operate that you only need one hand could ease a lot of that workload. And so there's different ways that you can consider, okay, if I put this XYZ platform into this kind of environment, would it still work? Which is why looking at the overarching principles is also helpful, because when those specific criteria don't make sense for your platform, what do you start to look for then instead?
Yeah, I feel like my favorite example of that is with Windows CE, where it had the tiny little scroll bar on the side that was untouchable unless you had like a stylus. Mm-hmm. It was the most worthless UI experience that I can remember. That's relatable to that one.
Yes.
Moving on to the third area you called that was understandable. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can, and this one seems like it's straightforward, but is it mainly like when I look at something, it's clearly labeled, or what do you think about, especially in mobile, when you think about understandable, what does that translate to from the web to mobile?
So the first two are a lot of like function. It's things like you check the text for this, you check your keys for this. Understandable is making sure that, okay, just because you met those, are you still telling the same story that you were telling to the base audience that you had started out talking to? So if you had a stair stepper on your website, have you made sure that when the text-to-talk reader is reading out all of that information, that it's coming through in the right order? Those types of pieces are what start to fall into understandable. Just because you've made this adjustment, there's this alternative version. Are you still getting the same flow, the same experience, and the same storytelling from that software?
Yep. How does menuing and menuing fall? Does that fall under operable or understandable? Like I always think about the hamburger menu randomly in different spots on different apps, but you know, how does menuing work in the context of, especially with mobile, in these principles?
I would say menuing probably falls a bit more under operable, where if you're going through this, for example, there was one website where we were tabbing through it and the menu had a sub menu that had a sub menu. And to get to the actual thing that you finally wanted to click, you're just sitting there tabbing for like what felt like an eternity to finally get into there. Those types of pieces would tend to fall under operable. Understandable might be more like, if you've ever watched Netflix and maybe no one's talking, but the subtitles will still say, car is screeching or something random that's describing the space. It's making sure that there's no actual voice happening here. But if you didn't know that a car crashed, that that sound was happening in the background, that would very much detract from your story. So giving those extra captions in there is a bit more of what understandable might mean.
I thought I was the only person who turned the captions on Netflix. Glad somebody else does too. I mainly do it for the British shows. I do struggle at times with some of my some of the stronger accents from certain parts of the UK.
Yes, and there's also always like the very funny ones where it's like laughs in Spanish, like those types of things will come up, and it's like okay.
That's interesting. And then the last area, the fourth area you talked about is robust. What does robust mean?
Robust is a unique one in that it's more so about all of the different types of ways that you test. And so it does overlap a lot with the above three, but it's making sure like, okay, you've tested your color for mobility. You've tested your color for visual, like those type, which doesn't entirely make sense as an example, but things like your menu, you've made sure mobility-wise it works, color-wise it works, hearing-wise it works, those types of pieces. It's expanding on these are the things you're testing for, these are the ways that you're testing for it.
All right, so the example I always think of it is on the web, it's if whether I'm using Safari or Firefox, the screen reader will work. So the user agent actually picks it up and runs through it properly. So an equivalent on mobile, if you're building a mobile app, I'm assuming it'd be similar if I'm using, you know, Safari or Chrome or a different app on there on the device to actually view like a web app, it'd be accessible via it. And then another, just like the some of the questions I had on the guidelines. I know Google has produced the Android or Material guidelines describing how to build apps on Android devices, and iOS has their Apple, what is it, AUG, Apple User Guidelines or User Interface Guidelines. How strict are those, or how strictly aligned are those to the actual web accessibility guidelines?
Yeah, for those, I mean, they have such a large amount of resources to dedicate to user testing, accessibility testing, those types of things that if you are uncertain about all of the principles, where to even start, like if you just stuck tried and true to exactly what material design says, you're good. Because if you pull their components of pieces, all of these different things tend to be built right into material design, which makes it really easy. There's certain things like color and fonts that if you start to change it up, just double checking that everything still works. But for the most part, all those pieces are okay. Because if you think about it, if you used material design, someone sued you for not being accessible, you could be like, well, hey, Google gave this to me. So you can go talk to them. So they make sure that everything's nicely buttoned up.
And you mentioned the lawsuits, and I've heard a couple of these where there's, I don't know if they're actually, I think it would not, like the equivalent phrase is patent troll, but it's more of accessibility trolls was what, what I've heard people say. So they're not actually representing, people with disabilities, and more of just lawyers that are out there trying to make money. But how prevalent are the accessibility trolls, or how big of a problem is it where you have to go make sure you have all the boxes checked versus, you know, making sure you're doing good due diligence and just trying to have a good experience for your end users?
Well, that's where the part of WCGA CAG is unofficially official. It was only first referenced in Section 508 of ADA, where it like could be held to a standard. So if that happened in 2018, thinking about all of the time that technology existed before that, there were plenty of lawsuits beforehand that referenced it, but never like it's never been formalized legally in the US. And I mean, that may change at some point, but it's only sort of unsort of official. And so these lawsuits, even though they're trolly, they do potentially help us in starting to establish some sense of accessibility guidelines, because those waters are very murky right now. There are three levels of WCAG guidelines, though. And so there's level A, AA, and AAA. And so level A, basically, if you're failing level A, you're at very bad risk of accessibility issues. It's a very, very low bar just to meet those very few criteria of accessibility. Typically, you'll see in lawsuits and stuff, companies being held to the AA standard, which is a good like middle ground. It's kind of the equivalent of C's get degrees, where it's not the best thing, but it is like pretty good. Like you clearly put in some form of an effort. And then the AAA is the like optimal. This is the perfect accessibility experience. These are the most rigorous accessibility pieces. But most of the time you'll see people held around the two, like the AA area. You're not doing well if you can't meet the just single A area.
Got it. And then to circle back a bit to when you first started talking about this, you know, usability versus accessibility, it feels like accessibility is just drives towards good usability. So even if you're not getting that AAA rating and you're trying to think through these things, it's going to create a better experience, even for people without disabilities that are using apps. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, there's a concept of the accessibility flywheel, which basically says the more that you create things that are accessible, the more people with disabilities will drive to create that to become a product, the more that it'll become more in the mainstream, and that cycle just sort of continues. And so as silly of an example as it is, the best UX example that I have is TikTok, where people were noticing that it had absolutely no closed captioning features. And so users had started adding in their own closed captions, and it became such a prevalent part of the platform that it actually introduced real captions into the app. And so pieces like that, or in the industrial design space, you've probably seen an OXO potato peeler before that, like
I can't unsee those. You've told me this before, but yeah, describe the OXO store to me.
It's the like thick handle. It has sort of the ridges towards the top. And originally it was designed for people with arthritis, and they did a lot of testing using bicycle handles, sticking it on a potato peeler and just checking to see if it worked. And it ended up just becoming generally one of the best brands for kitchen utensils and supplies, because the grip was so nice that everyone wanted it, and not just people with disabilities. And so you'll tend to see a lot of dupes now, and it became a great thing for elderly people who really enjoyed cooking and were being hindered by arthritis, having a new space there. But then also, the more mainstream it becomes, the easier it is for people who are disabled.
Yeah, I think you told me that story about 2 years ago, and I can't unsee it now. I remember I bought a can opener recently. I went to the store and I was like trying the cheap ones out. I'm like, these are terrible. And then I grabbed the OXO one. I was like, Veronica's right.
OXO. It's unfortunate. The nice things are a little bit more expensive.
Accessibility improves usability. So it's a great theme. All right. So I'll just do a quick summary of this. The four principles you covered that are sort of the overarching areas. So perceivable, which is in mobiles, things like the colors, your ability to see what's on the screen. Operable, I think in mobile, the one you call out there that is really pet peeve of mine is tap areas. So the tiny little font that nobody can tap on, don't do that. Have like a large tap area. The third one was understandable, which is you're making sure that things are intuitive as you go through it. So how things are laid out and menuing. And then the last one was robust, which is really thinking across the different options and variabilities and different platforms. And so for you, just in summary, if you had to say, like, you know, you're a company or you're somebody building a mobile app, you only have a limited amount of time and resources, is there like one or two things you said that you would want to recap? So just go focus on those first and go fix these. This is probably the first thing to go make your app better or more usable.
Yes, I would say definitely start with perceivable and operable. If you just think of these on a general level, chances are you're hitting all of the criteria, or at least the A level criteria, just by thinking about it on a high level and keeping them in mind throughout your process. So just making sure, like, this is visually clear, I can navigate this well. Those are things that you're probably already considering, but just considering them a little bit more specifically. And then those tend to lead into understandable and maybe robust will fall more into your QA process. And so delegating those pieces more allows it to be a little bit less daunting than the 78 criteria that you see on their website and all of the different testing methods that they have for each of those. But if you just keep people at the forefront of your process, it's a good way to get started.
Got it. And then do you have any recommended reading? So where could people find out more about this? Is there a specific website where all of this is posted mm-hmm. somewhere? Any good recommendations for summaries?
The best thing that I could suggest is for you to look at the WCAG quick reference guide. It's a bullet point list of everything. If you wanted to get more of a deep dive into each of the pieces, you can click into each one. But at the end of the day, the best source is the original source.
All right. So Google WCAG and it'll come up.
Yeah.
Awesome. Excellent. And Veronica, thank you for joining us and walking us through this today. Look in the show notes. We'll have some links to that, to the WCAG guidelines. I got it right that time. And if you have any topics or items you'd like us to discuss in future podcasts, definitely reach out to us at info@bluefletch.com. And as always, feel free to like and follow us for more of these episodes. Thank you again, Veronica, and appreciate your time today.
Yep. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks. We'll see you.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Enterprise Mobility Roundup podcast. If you enjoyed the discussion, please take a few moments to rate us. If you'd like to listen to future episodes, please subscribe. To learn more about mobility topics or submit any questions, visit us at bluefletch.com.